Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The 24th Annual High Zero 2022 Festival of Experimental Improvised Music begins today, Thursday, September 15th, and continues through Sunday, September 18th, in Baltimore, Maryland. Performers include reed players Samuel Burt and Jamal Moore, pianist and spoken word poetry artist Tatiana Castro, Michelle Blue playing singing bowl and rain stick, and Norman W. Long utilizing a sampler and synthesizer. For more information, festival@highzero.org. Jazz Fest in White Plains, New York continues through Sunday, September 18th. Scheduled performers are bassist Francois Mouten and vocalist Kavita Shah, pianist Joey Alexander, bassist Buster Williams and his quartet, and the Albert Rivera Quintet. For more information, artsw.org/jazzfest. Jazz at the Lake. Lake George Jazz Weekend is go, beginning tomorrow, Friday, September 16th, through Sunday, September 18th, in Lake George, New York, hosted by the Lake George Arts Project for over 35 years. Performers include the Chembo Corniel Quintet, guitarist Gillard Hexelman and Far Star Trio, and the Zach Brock Quartet. For more information, lakegeorgearts.org. Beginning tomorrow, the 12th Annual Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Performers include bassist Ron Carter's Foresight, drummer Nate Smith and Kinsfolk, and a tribute to trumpeter and educator Donald Byrd. For more information, pittsburghjazzfest.org. The 65th Monterey Jazz Festival is scheduled Friday, September 23rd through Sunday, September 25th in Monterey, California. Performers include The Bad Plus, vocalist Gregory Porter and Veronica Swift, pianist Chuco Valdez, and vibist Joel Ross. For more information, MontereyJazzFestival.org. Composer, author, percussionist, and conductor Adam Rudolph's new book, Sonic Elements, Matrices, Cosmograms, and Ostinatos for Circularity, comes out on September 20th via Meta Records. The 121-page spiral-bound book details his visionary ideas on intervals, harmony, and rhythms. For more information, metarecords.com. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, September 15th, pianist Elon Mailer and his trio of bassist Tony Shear and drummer Francisco Mela, 8:30 p.m. And Friday, September 16th through the 18th, drummer Steve Smith's Vital Information Trio for two sets each night. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club tomorrow night, the Birdland Big Band, 5:30 p.m. And on Sunday, September 18th, trombonist John Fedchok's New York Big Band. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Spyro Gyra with special guest the Brian Patnau Quartet perform at Cohoes Music Hall in Cohoes, New York tomorrow night, 8 p.m. For more information, thecohoesmusichall.org. vocalist Dominique Eade and pianist Armin Danilian, with bassist David Clark and percussionist George Schuler, are part of Lenox Jazz Stroll on Saturday, September 17th in Lenox, Massachusetts. The event begins this evening, September 15th. For more information, lenox.org/jazzstroll. This Friday and Saturday night, September 16th and 17th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, trumpeter and vocalist Benny Banach III and his quartet for two sets. And on Sunday, September 18th, reed player Saren Baronian and Taxim, Middle East Jazz, for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. The Howling for Jeremy Steig's Solo Flute Festival, live, will be held at 6BC Botanical Garden in the East Village of New York City. Performers include Cheryl Pyle, Premek Russell, and Chip Shelton. For more information, 6BCGarden.org. Pianist and composer Satoko Fuji records her 100th album on Tuesday, September 20th at the Demena Center in New York City with trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith, bassoonist Sarah Schoenbeck, and drummer Tom Rainey, and others. The release becomes available to the public in December. Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue perform at the Lexington Opera House in Lexington, Kentucky on Wednesday, September 21st. For more information, lexingtonoperahouse.com. And now for new releases. Coming out within the next week, pianist Alain Mailer's There Is a Dance on Nouvelle, pianist Bruce Barth's Dedication on Origin, guitarist and trombonist Emiliano Sampao and the Jazz Symphonic Orchestra's self-release We Have a Dream, and saxophonist Will Vinson's Tripwire on Whirlwind Recordings. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My two guests are associated with this year's Hyde Park Jazz Festival in Chicago, Illinois. Kate Dumbleton, co-executive and artistic director, and Michonne Hardy, the festival's volunteer coordinator. The festival is scheduled September 24th and 25th. Here we go. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Let's start with Kate. Kate, the Hyde Park Jazz Festival hasn't missed a beat in 16 years of presentations, has it? Was there a year that it missed?
Nope. We powered right through the pandemic, so we've been here every year since the first year.
Yeah. Part of the festival's mission is, quote, dedicated to supporting the presentation and ongoing development of jazz, particularly on the south side of Chicago. Would you name some of the upcoming talent, established talent, and homegrown talent scheduled to perform during the festival?
Absolutely. Well, I can first tell you that one of the ways that we animate that mission is through a commissioning program. This year we're commissioning the pianist and composer Miguel de la Serna, who is from the South Side of Chicago and is composing a piece about his father's life in Chicago, particularly on the South Side. So that's one example of the ways in which we're thinking about really the trajectory of the art form over time, specifically related to Chicago South Side. We have many homegrown artists this year, including Victor Garcia, Dee Alexander, Orbert Davis, Fred Jackson, Chuck Webb. Gosh, I could go on and on. Let's see, who else? Jim Baker, Douglas Ewart, really exploring a broad trajectory of what the music has been like historically on the South Side of Chicago, from the experimental work of someone like Douglas Ewart, who's coming from the AACM, to someone like Orbert Davis, who's coming from a straight ahead tradition, but also someone who has worked really in most really interesting ways to convene classical music and through composed music with jazz and improvisation. So we have Maggie Brown also, whose father was an activist, a social activist, and writer and poet. She's also performing and has been in the festival every year since it started. So it's really a festival very dedicated to the music of Chicago and the creators of Chicago, both young and those who have been around for a great number of years.
Of the many performance applications or submissions that you and your committee received for this year's festival, where was the increase? Was it from local talent or from talent outside of Chicago?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I think we had what was exciting this year was we had an increase in artists expressing interest who were coming from other countries, which suggests to me that people were ready to get back on the road again, and that the whole ecosystem is starting to move a little bit. So that was a sort of exciting element. I think in general, we have a lot of different ways in which we're in contact and in communication with artists and their teams, so to speak. So there are submissions. There are also lots of relationships that I have with managers and agents and artists who are contacting me through different conferences and different platforms. I think there's a lot of really interesting young artists that are coming up who are expressing more interest in being at the Hyde Park Jazz Festival in particular. So I'm not sure I could say there was any one group that looked to me as if it was, coming in greater numbers. But what I can see is that what was exciting was to see like a super robust pool of people interested, which to me was suggesting that the kind of wheels are turning again and that people are ready to get back on the road, and that the sort of resilience of the system overall is really, really right there and really moving.
Michonne, this is your first year as the volunteer manager.
It is.
As I've been told, you're active in the Chicago jazz community.
Yes, I am very active.
In recruiting volunteers for this year's festival, what are some personality traits that you're looking for in them?
First of all, I like to say I took over this project from Brett Sweeney, who was a wonderful organizer in and of himself, who has done volunteer management for the Hyde Park Jazz Fest for a number of years. But I'd like to start out by saying that the Hyde Park Jazz Festival and the jazz volunteers in general in the city of the Chicago are some of the most dedicated volunteers there are. They tend to be a little older crowd who really enjoy the music and are vested in making sure that the music is able to be presented in the city of Chicago, and recognize that the volunteer component of the festival is a very important component in making the festival happen. And so we tend to have super committed volunteers who are very, we have also have some that are regular volunteers who have their own personal venue that they love to volunteer at and are very, you know, are first to get to that venue because, you know, that is my spot. I've got my routine down and everything. And for all of the Hyde Park Jazz Festival events, Back Alley Jazz, the artist pop-ups as well, we tend to have a very dedicated core of volunteers. So I did not really have to have a specific strategy in reaching or a specific criteria for reaching. It's really more of just letting people know what opportunities are there for volunteering. And even though it's a free festival, people still like to feel as though they are part of the festival. And so, like I said, they have their specific places that they like to volunteer, and they bring friends and family along sometime as well to volunteer with them. So it really is an easy pull managing the volunteer commitment. We do sometimes have to do a little bit of pushing to get some of the later time slots and things of that nature done. But just a super committed person who is really understands that the volunteer is a critical component of the management of the festival and the success of the festival is someone that we're looking for.
Yeah. I read the volunteer information packet that you have for the festival, and that first section, stay at your post, enjoy the show, security awareness, teamwork, all relevant and important points to impress upon volunteers. Okay, here comes my story. Here comes my story. In my former position as an audience service manager at a fine arts center, one of my responsibilities was training the volunteer community and student ushers. My supervisor and I had a difference of opinion on what group should be the focus of my time and attention. My supervisor argued that it should be the patrons who pay to be there, so their needs supersede anything else during the event. I always countered with, it's the volunteer ushers who are the ones who make or break the experience of attending an event, so they need to be constantly trained and encouraged. Coming up to this festival, this year's Hyde Park Jazz Festival, have you two had the conversation about the priorities of attending to audience members and volunteers?
I'll take that one, Kate. Yes, we've had that discussion. And to that end, we have volunteer training. I agree with you. The personnel in the space make the experience for the patron and can often diffuse situations that would get out of control with the patron and make this experience for other patrons not a great experience. So we do have a orientation session that we take our volunteers through. This year is going to be on Zoom because we are now all acclimated to Zoom. So we'll have several Zoom orientations. And like you said, you've read the packet that we put out to impress upon our volunteers, once again, the importance of their position and how their behavior can control the experience of the patron and the day. So we do take our volunteer corps very, very seriously. We know that they are the first entry point for our patrons' experience. Even before the music, they are seeing the volunteer as a greeter, the volunteer as a check-in point, and the volunteer as a management to seat you in your space. So they definitely control the experience, and we do multiple trainings with them as well as the packet to let them know that they are really the controller of the experience.
Kate.
Thank you so much for that. And I think this is a super interesting and really important question. When I first came on to the festival and someone let me know that we had roughly 200 people that would sign up to volunteer every year, naively, my first response was, wow, that's more than we need. So maybe we should just have, fewer, we get it. And it was just such an ignorant misunderstanding of what the volunteers actually represent, which is the level of excitement and commitment and relationship that that so many people have with the festival, and they're that people want to help. They want to be a part of it. And so I quickly understood the naivety and stupidity of my more sort of emphasis on efficiency, and realized really how important and essential the volunteer program was. And as a part of that, and over the years of working with the festival, one of the things that has been important to me is that the volunteers feel that they have the support of the organization as well, in a sort of reciprocal relationship. And by that, I mean, you know, the festival is hard to produce. It's a huge event, and there's a lot of moving parts. And in many ways, we're often presenting performances in spaces that don't regularly have concerts, right? So in a sense, we're bringing in the infrastructure for an afternoon. And so there's like lots of things that are going on in that space that might not be going on a typical afternoon. Also, because the festival is free, sometimes there's crowds that we can't fit into one space or another space. And sometimes people can be pretty bummed out that they can't fit into one concert space or another. And sometimes they lose perspective on that moment and become upset, right? And so one of the things that we are really careful about is making sure that the volunteers are not in the position of having to respond to patrons or community members who are really upset, that it's the festival's responsibility to take care of those situations and to make sure that volunteers are never put in an awkward or unpleasant situation. So we do have, managers for each venue who are the caretakers, if you will, of the volunteers' experience. And so that there's someone looking out for the experience of the volunteers, in addition to Michonne, who's done such an amazing job, you know, helping everybody understand what their role is and making sure that they have the information that they need, making sure that if they need any particular conditions, like a chair or a certain kind of seat, or making sure that we have water and snacks and making sure that they have breaks and all those things, that we are caring for the volunteers as in equivalent ways that we're caring for the people who are coming to the festival, so that everybody can have the best experience possible, and so that the volunteers want to come back and continue to help us. And so the people coming to the festival feel like when they come to a concert, they have what they need to enjoy it.
In my memoir, I will dedicate a chapter to my experiences working at a fine arts center with volunteers. I took pride in working alongside those students and community members, but I had two things I would not do. I would not unclog a toilet, and I would not deal with vomit. I said, there's the cat litter. You take care of it. So that's all I have to say about that.
Thankfully, those are two things we have not had to deal with yet.
You do not want to.
No.
So, Michonne, are there any changes or updates to attendance protocol that attendees need to be aware of right now?
Even though we are in venues on Saturday, I was about to say that the majority of the festival is outdoors, we are still in the time of COVID. And we still need to be super mindful and super, super careful about masking and making sure that those requirements for each of the venues are adhered to in the space. So if a venue has requirements around COVID or any other infectious disease protocols, that we make sure that we are adhering to those protocols as well. That is the biggest update for the festival of this year. But also, we're just always in communication with our venues and making sure that we're adhering to their protocols and things of their understanding as far as what's necessary to produce in the venue. Some of our longstanding volunteers we know have things that, like Kate, that have mentioned, we have volunteers that have sometimes been in wheelchairs or have special needs as far as chairs and things are concerned. We're definitely making sure to make sure that volunteers who have those requirements are placed in accessible spaces so that they can get in and out of their spaces as well, and they can still feel a part of the experience as well. So those are things that we make sure to cater to as well.
Thank you for that. To both of you and to the South Side of Chicago community, what is the significance of this year's Hyde Park Jazz Festival?
Well, I mean, I think at least for the organization, and I don't want to speak for, you know, a massively diverse community, but I think what I witnessed last year was such pure joy at being able to come together to listen to jazz and to kind of see one another and be in community. My sense is that this year will be that, but even more in the sense that we are now fully back to our broad set of venues and different types of spaces, and more concerts. So I think the significance is that not only did the festival adapt for 2 years and continue to produce performances for communities and to pay artists at a time when it was a pretty bad situation for many of them financially, that the festival has kind of come through the pandemic and is now able to produce in the way that it was before. So I think, again, you know, to lean into the word resilience, to demonstrate the resilience of the arts infrastructure and the jazz infrastructure and jazz artists and the jazz community, I think that is a major significance for the festival this year. And then also we have international collaboration happening. We have Ethiopian musicians coming to collaborate with Tamika Reed's group Here and Now. And I think that's really significant also because it does represent the idea that international cultural exchange can begin to happen again in the live arts. And also in particular with Ethiopian musicians, a country that is really struggling politically, that the sort of resilience and tenacity of these artists who just getting the visas was, you know, more work than you and I probably do in a year. So, you know, just the fight and the commitment and the tenacity of artists who want to create work for and with communities. And in particular, I'd argue the South Side of Chicago is just such a important place for this music. So, you know, that's what I would at least say and speculate is the significance of the festival this year.
Michonne?
For me, the significance of the festival, and like I said, as Kate said, I don't want to speak to a general audience, but being as embedded as I am in the artistic community, just for the South Side of Chicago to be able to have some of the stalwart events in full that they've had in the past, and to be able to experience those arts in our community is a beautiful thing. And it's something that we really relish and truly enjoy. The statement is there is nothing like summertime in Chicago, and to have summertime in Chicago back in full force has been the most beautiful thing to witness and experience and be a part of this year. Just artists working, artists creating, artists producing, audiences engaged. We've had some of the biggest audiences at our festivals and events this year than we've had in the past several years. And that's due to the fact that we just missed engaging with the arts. And to be able to see some of these spectacular new programs like the Ethiopian collaboration and some of the new music that's been created from everyone's COVID internal searching is just really, really a beautiful thing to witness.
For more information, HydeParkJazzFestival.org. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. With drummer, band leader, composer, and educator E.J. Strickland. He leads a sextet at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York on Sunday, September 18th. The performance is titled A Unified Stance We Must Take. So, E.J., I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you so much for having me, Cheryl.
So, let's start off with the release Black Lives. From Generation to Generation. It came out in March on Jammin' Colors, which is a booking, management, production, and promotion company run out of Belgium.
Right.
I watched the accompanying video, and I could not have extended a more honest, vigorous call to action to listen to the music and engage with its message.
Right.
How did you become involved with this recording?
My booking agent, who is Stephanie Callenberg, who's head of Jammin' Colors, reached out to me and told me about this project. And immediately I knew that I was going to do it before she even finished, talking about, the premise and what it was for. We were in the middle of a pandemic and we hadn't been able to create or do anything like that during the pandemic. And this was a perfect way to take on the things that were going on during that pandemic, the whole George Floyd incident, all of those things, and put it into the music and let the emotion out in the music, and help to send a message to to stop violence and to value Black lives.
Yeah. You know, there are those who've entangled the message by movements like Black Lives Matter with the ideas of socialism and anti-Americanism.
Right.
Then many right-leaning media outlets follow up with an even more convoluted and racist pronouncement. And, all I can say is that the struggle continues. And right. I hope that radio programmers like myself do not shy away from this message, because we are all involved in it. And I so appreciate this release.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. I think what people misunderstand about Black lives is that, you know, this isn't just about Black lives. This is about everyone. When we protect a group of people and we say, okay, not enough attention is given to this and we're not protecting this group enough and we need to do more for this group, we're in fact protecting everyone, because somewhere down the line, every group is going to be affected mm-hmm. by something and have some kind of, you know, threat to them. And we need to stand together and we need to uplift everybody and bring everybody together. That's the message that we're sending here. Mm-hmm.
I should also mention that this release has a presence on Facebook and Instagram, so, and at the Jam and Colors website.
Exactly. Yeah.
Will you be joining any part of the release's upcoming European tour?
I'm not certain. I'm not certain if I'll be able to join that tour, but I would really love to. I'm still talking it out, you know, working it out with my booking agent. But it would be great. I wrote a great song called Language of the Unheard, which means a lot to me. And it's one of my favorite compositions that I've written. Mm-hmm. And the whole premise of the song is to, you know, actually provide, you know, struggle upon hope. You know, there's an urgency in the song. You know, there's a constant pulse and a constant drive, but it's a hopeful drive as mm-hmm. well, you know, so it's urgency upon hope. And that's the message that I want to convey. If I am able to play this on tour, that would be great, because I want everybody to feel that.
Leader, you fronted the E.J. Strickland Quintet, the
yes.
E.J. Strickland Project.
Yes.
Did you head Transient Beings?
Yes.
You did. Okay.
Transient Beings is my project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This Sunday, September 18th, you're bringing a sextet to the Falcon in Marlboro, New York.
That's right.
Ron Blake and Myron Walden on saxophones.
That's right.
Victor Gould on piano.
Yes.
Tamir Schmierling on bass.
Yes.
And Kofi Hunter on percussion.
Exactly, yes.
What can your audience expect to hear?
My audience can expect to hear another composition that I wrote, which is comprised of 6 to 8 different compositions within itself. It's a suite of music. And the title of the entire piece is called A Unified Stance We Must Take. And I was commissioned by the Jazz Coalition to write this piece. And when they asked me to do this, when they asked me to write a piece reflecting, you know, what's going on in the present times and how you're feeling through all of this, I knew exactly what I wanted to focus on. I dedicated this entire suite to Senator John Lewis, who had passed away shortly before all of this came about. And we were going into an election, a big election in our country. And I just wanted to write a piece of music that inspired everyone to participate and to exercise their right to vote, which is what John Lewis stood for. His life stood for that, to exercise your right to vote, to participate in the voting system, and do what you can to make this world a better place. And that's what that piece is all about. There's six movements and there's two interludes. The first movement is a unified stance we must take. The second movement is how many more reasons. Then there's an interlude. And then after that, there's a piece, it's called For Our Future Gen. No, actually, after that is Always Forward, Never Backwards. And then the movement after that is called For Our Future Generations. Then there's going to be another interlude. And then I'm going to end it with Democracy Now. And the last movement, the final movement, is a call to action.
Tough. Would you discuss your evolution through your ensembles and how playing as a sideman has bettered you as a band leader?
Oh, I think that has everything to do with being a good band leader, is knowing what brings out the best results in you as a sideman. Then you know what the best thing to do is to bring out the best results in your bandmates when you're a band leader, when you're heading a band and you have a vision and you want them to do their best to bring that to life. So the more experience you have as a sideman, the greater leader you will be. The more empathetic you are to your sidemen, and the more you understand what's gonna bring out their best traits, the better leader you're gonna be. So, yeah.
Would you discuss, because you mentioned it before, would you discuss what the Jazz Coalition is and their, quote, new fundraising effort to support live performances and new recordings of commissioned works?
I believe the Jazz Coalition is an organization that, commissions artists to do work, but also, provides, some money to them, mm-hmm. In order to do that, in order to bring their creations to life. It's basically to keep the entire engine running, keep the artists producing work, keep the artists surviving from producing that work, and for everybody else to benefit from that.
The Jazz Coalition launched its commission fund, awarding $1,000 grants to 104 musicians in support of new music. Chosen artists were asked to consider focusing their commissions on the movement for racial justice and building on a long legacy of political engagement in jazz. This funding initiative affects the first 14 performances that are scheduled on Sundays between September 11th and December 18th at the Falcon. Where do you currently teach?
I teach all over. I've taught at the New School University. I've taught both privately and I've, taught classes there. I've also taught some classes at Juilliard, also Columbia University. Also have done some teaching at Berkeley and also at University of Winnipeg, University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada. Yeah.
Now, as a prospective student, I believe you'd attract their attention because you're an active musician who travels internationally as well as domestically.
Exactly.
What's the discussion that you're constantly having with drum and percussion students?
The conversation I'm having with percussion and drum students is what their role is in the music that they play. The role that they play is a very awesome and huge responsibility. So I want them to really understand that role in order to fulfill it, you know, because no matter what kind of information I'm giving them, if they don't really understand and have a full comprehension of what their role is as a percussionist and as a drummer in a band, in an ensemble, then it has no meaning. It should have meaning, you know. So what I tell them, what I really want to enforce to drummers and percussionists is your role in an ensemble is to make the music feel good. As a drummer, you literally orchestrate the entire band with your cymbals and your drums. You know, percussion is very powerful. It can, if you know, used in a bad way, it can overpower the band and drown out everything. So with that much power comes great responsibility. So we have all of the subdivisions and everything that we play. So if we're playing everything, we're playing the strong beats and we're playing all of the subdivisions in between, we're literally holding everything together, you know, and we're responsible for making the music feel good. No matter what we play, whether we're swinging, whether we're playing funk, whether we're playing country music, whether we're playing classical music, whether it's avant-garde, our role is to make the music feel good.
So the drummer really does lead the band.
Exactly.
Now, what about when it comes to gear and what they should have for every playing situation?
For every playing situation, as a drummer, you need to have your own cymbals. You know, yeah. I can't stress enough that you need to have your own cymbals. The cymbals are a signature of a drummer's sound. Hmm. So you travel with that, whether you're going to China, whether you're going to Europe, whether you're staying at home, that sound travels with you. You have your sticks and brushes and mallets, and you have your cymbals, you know, so that's very, very, very key to your musicianship and what you bring to the ensemble.
I'd like to draw upon a quote from the website of Jammin' Colors. This is from you.
Okay.
You're not going to hear a traditional jazz drummer. You're going to hear someone who's drawing from many different styles, many different approaches. Mm-hmm. That's what my true voice is. And I always try to remember that music is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. EJ, first of all, I could not agree with you more. When you feel it becoming a drag, how do you turn it around when it starts to get, you know, when it's not fun?
When the music's not fun, I try my best to connect more with the musicians that are on stage with me. I try to look at them more, not be so shy. If everybody's kind of like in their own zone and not really, you know, connected with each other, I try to make that connection myself. And I look at them and, you know, until they look at me. And then when they look at me, I give them a smile, you know, or, you know, I'll start dancing with the music, you know, as I'm playing, you know, and hope that, you know, either my smile, my joy for the music and my, you know, the dance that I find within the music is infectious and goes, you know, to them. You know, and hopefully, like, if I'm in that zone, if I'm not really, you know, there, somebody in the band will do the same with me and really, you know, try to connect with me and look at me and do whatever they can to, you know, bring something infectious that'll, you know, make me participate more and participate better.
You could also just raise a stick to them and
yeah,
learn them some. Well, EJ, we're coming to the end of this interview and I want to give you the last word. If there's a question I haven't asked you, if there's something you'd like to tell us about, you know, another upcoming project.
Okay. Well, I just started a new project, which is a smaller group than what I'm used to playing with and writing for. It's called the E.J. Strickland Guitar Quartet. It's a departure from the two horns and two voices that I have up front, usually in my bands. I usually deal with saxophones carrying the melody and the main theme of the music. Now I've switched to the guitar and hearing that voice and writing for that voice, and as a single voice, carrying the melody through, and you know, forming the sound of the group based around that. So look for a recording soon. I'll definitely, you know, want to go into the studio with that project. And our next gig is actually September 14th. It's before the 18th, September 14th, Wednesday, at Bar Bayou in Brooklyn, New York. It's a very nice venue, a very nice bar, very nice staff, close, intimate space, and you'll be hearing us play my music and having a good time.
Interview with drummer, bandleader, composer, and educator E.J. Strickland. He'll lead a sextet in a jazz coalition commissioned performance titled A Unified Stance We Must Take at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York on Sunday, September 18th. For more information on E.J. Strickland, jamincolors.com. And for more information on the Falcon and the Jazz Coalition, liveatthefalcon.com. And we close out today's show with some music. Recorded during a live concert tour of the Netherlands in 2021, Dutch trumpeter Eric Vleemens and American accordionist Will Holhouser with the tune Children's Song from their V-Flow challenge release of this month, Two for the Road. They perform at Rizzoli's Bookstore's Music Aperitivo concert series in New York City this Sunday, September 18th, part of their 12-city U.S. and Canadian tour. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC. WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.